The yeshiva will be divided into two. First, we'll talk about Shlach briefly, and then I want to talk about my Rosh Yeshiva from Itri, yeshiva I learned in 71-72. Many mefarshim talk about two of the parshas that discuss, of course, as you know, a mission that was sent to reconnoiter Eretz Yisrael. One is found here in Shlach, and the other is found in Sefer Yoshua, if you recall. Undoubtedly you do, because it happens to be the Haftarah of Parsha Shlach. And they talk about both. It's in Yoshua, the beginning of Sefer Yoshua, Perek Beis. And there are many areas of commonality and many distinctions between these two parshas. Even a cursory glance will actually reveal a great divide between these two incidents. And let's just mention the distinctions. Shlach. How many people are sent?
12.
12 heads of Shvatim to reconnoiter the land, to examine its topography, to see the economic situation in Eretz Yisrael. And the Baraglim devote how many days to this task?
40
days, correct. And we reported on the land's fruitfulness, while they also issued a disclaimer. The disclaimer is very critical. Namely, what do they tell back? What is the report that they...
Full of giants.
Correct, full of giants. Eretz Ochel is Yoshvel. And therefore...
It's longer than milk and honey.
That's
the priest.
That is a correct statement. However, the context... If you know, where is that
Rashi,
found?
Rashi says that it's only because they wanted to understand.
Well, excellent. That's what Rashi points out. But even the Pshat, look at the Pshat and the Psukim, they say, Eretz Zovas Cholot Vashi, Vizep Yiryov, here's the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. But then there's one word that the Ramban comments on, is a very critical word. Ephes. They say, Ephes, but.
Ephes means zero.
Kala is so beautiful. This young woman that you're about to go out with, she's absolutely stunning, but she has a forked nose and a few other, shall we say, slight difficulties and deformities. And she also, shall we say, has difficulty looking at people and difficulty walking and a few other things. But only a few minor problems along the way. So that's how the Rashi and the Ramban understand the Pesukim. Efes means they basically were telling them what the Gemara calls in Suvis, Shayim Yavetzidah. Shavu Vitzido means that really your intention, of course, is to totally, completely negate the entire mission. That's what Rashi, when you point out correctly, notes. But you sort of build it up, you build the hype, and then completely, shall we say, the balloon is completely, totally deflated. So that's what we have over here. But what does Kalev say? Why do they call him response? It says, no. All now there be a Rashi Rosok, Yachadula. What does he say? We're capable of doing it. We can vanquish the inhabitants. But unfortunately, the Lashon Hara spread, and it was so insidious that they succeeded in generating a groundswell against going to Eretz Yisrael, and as a result, it led to a whole bunch of complaints. One second, I have not even opened up my mouth. And, I opened up my mouth, that's true. But not much that. Yes?
So, wait, but if Kalev wouldn't have spoke up, it seems like they wouldn't have said that we can't conquer them.
Why do you assume that?
No, I'm not saying.
So look at the language, by the way, one second. You look at the language of the pasuk. The mission Moshe Rabbeinu defines what it is, and then the Torah tells us they come back after 40 days. They come to Moshe and Aaron, and then they tell him about the Eretz Zavas Chol of Vashas. You've indicated it's that period. However, there's a disclaimer because why do you assume here they're telling Moshe Rabbeinu? And Moshe didn't say a word yet.
Doesn't Kalev say, oh, we could conquer them, and then the Rabbeinu no, shoot back? No, we can't.
That's incorrect. Take a look at the pasuk. But the Sukkim are not like what you said. The Sukkim indicate that part of their report was number one about the Cholav Advash, but beyond that, Ephes Kiazo, and Amalek is there, and all the nations are there. So right away, of course, they have to respond. And that's what, in effect, the Torah tells us that Kalev said, all of that, Yerashah, so Pasuk Kalami.
Only after he says that we can conquer them,
but that was a reaction to what he said. But the reason why he said what he said, because what they said in Chavches and Chavches, Ephes Ki Azahom, and their fortresses, they're living in fortified cities, and there are giants there, and Amalek is there, and the Chiti, and the Yebusi, and the Amori, etc. So right away, Kalev had to respond to that, because that was basically an overpowering argument that could not possibly be defended at all. So he said, no, we can still do it. And right away they said, no, we can't do it. And the Torah says, Lamed Beis, Vayotziu, Dibat Haaretz. They spoke Lashon Hara against Eretz Yisrael. So even though Yeshua and Kalev valiantly struggled to somehow stem the cascading tides, the result was a very tragic result. Namely, that the next parak, Parak Yudalud, as you know, deals with the well-known Gemara at the end of Maseches Tainis. They were destined to die in the Midbar in the course of the 40 years of wandering. One second, let me just get to Sefer Yeshua, which is the Haftarah. Take a look at the Haftarah of Yeshua Parak Beis. How many spies were sent here?
Two.
And again, they were not sent, shall we say, in an open kind of way, but rather they were sent clandestinely. How do we know that? From one word in Pasuk Aleph. Which word? Vayishach Yeshua ben Nun Hashitim Shnayim Anashim Raglim Cheresh. You know what the word Cheresh means?
Quietly,
correct? You know, a Cheresh is someone, Chas V'Shalom, Shein HaShomer, Yedem
Adaber.
Can't speak. He's mute. A deaf mute, basically. It's a Mishnah Trumas. And the Gemara speaks a lot about the status of the Cheresh and the Kotten. But anyway, they were sent clandestinely. And of course, their identities could be discovered. And who discovers them? The Melech Yericho, the king of Yericho. And he tells Rachav, she's the one, of course, who is essentially hiding them. So the king, in fact, tells Rachav to remand them to the custody of the authorities. But Rachav sees the Yad Hashem. Take a look at the Tzukim. Rachav sees the Yad Hashem very clearly, and the will of Hashem to realize the promise of Kibush Haaretz. And she succeeds in secreting the Meraglim away with the would-be captives. So I want to just now, overall, discuss the distinction between the two aforementioned episodes. And take a look carefully in the Tzukim, you'll see that the distinctions are fairly clear. In Sefer Yehoshua, the two Meraglim, their identity is immediately uncovered. They did not achieve the goals that they actually set out for themselves. They barely escaped, but they were able to escape because of the aid of Rachav. According to Chazal, by the way, this Rachav is Rachav Azayna. She's a well-known courtesan. And later on, according to Chazal, whom did she marry?
Yeshua
ben Nun.
Rachav.
Rachav Azayna married Yeshua ben Nun. Rather fascinating.
Is she convert?
That is a separate discussion, which needs a separate attention that I cannot discuss right now. I beg of you not to get into that because that will be the end of the shiur, and I have to do other things that I would like to do, if you don't mind. So you'll have to get me another location, please, Nether. But again, as I said, in Sefer Yehoshua, you have these Meraglim, and they were able to escape. And in the case of Shlach, they were successful in their 40-day mission. They returned with a wealth of information. However, unfortunately, these 12 distinguished Rashi Shvatim, we know what happened. They operated in the open for a period of 40 days. The Meraglim of Yeshua operated, as I said on the cover, the word cheresh. Down in Perek Beis Pasuk Aleph is critical. Shnayim Anashim Meraglim cheresh leimor. However, I think there's another major difference that lies between each group, and I want to examine the Pesukim carefully, which is generally what you have to do when you want to come to the distinction I'm about to come to. Take a look at the language of the Pesukim. And you have to, as I said, there's a key phrase or word that occurs many times in the Torah that generally defines, shall we say, the mission. There's one word in Shlach. I don't know if you noticed it. I'm sure you did. Which word describes the nature of the mission? And this word occurs and recurs a number of times in the Chumash. Stop the beginning. Excellent. The word, as you put it, v'yaturu, and as I put it, v'yasuru. But that word is critical. Why do I say that? Take a look now, a bit later, after all the Shvatim I mentioned, Pasuk Tezayin. Eile Shmos HaAnashim Asher Shalach Moshe Latur Et Haaretz.
Latur.
Latur means the tour. T-O-U-R. Latur. I'm just being, shall we say, a little bit as my usual comical relief. What does the word Latur mean? Or Lasur?
Scout
out the land. Very good. Now take a little bit further. Again, this is not the second. This is the second time the word is used in Pasuk Chav Aleph. Vayalu.
Looks like Yud Zayin, no?
I mentioned Yud Zayin a second ago.
Tez Zayin also.
In Tez Zayin, again, the Pasuk says, thank you very much, Tez Zayin and Yud Zayin. Vayishach Osam Moshe, Sham Aleichem, Basur Azeret Kenan. And then a bit later, after Moshe describes what they're supposed to do, the topography of the land, Chav Aleph. Vayalu, Vayosuru, Baturu. Again, this is the fourth time the word is used, and then it goes on to describe the Anakim, etc. And then, when the tour is over, Pasuk Chafei, Vayashuvu mitur haaretz. Probably Adam is the only one here in this room who may or may not be aware of you know, among the many accusations against the Rosh Memshalah, we have here a Rosh Memshalah, a prime minister. I think he's an outstanding prime minister. Lufi Adnius Naidi, Yesh Makom Lachlok Alai. But anyway, okay. What happened? Never said it anymore. One of the many, many accusations that was actually leveled against him, and actually this is an accusation which is not uncommon, is actually the issue of the trips to Chutz Laaretz. I don't know what's recent, the vintage. There are so many, I can't even keep track of them, to be honest with you. And I am not concerned, to be honest with you, about the fact that he got champagne from this one and cigars from that one. You know what I say? Who cares? As long as he's a good Rosh Memshalah. And as far as I'm concerned, he's concerned about the, which he is, about the defense of the country from all of our, shall we say, an onslaught of enemies, whether it's surrounded with Tzafona, Negbad, you name it, Mizracha, everywhere from every side. And he does a great job in terms of the economic fecundity of the country. That's sufficient as far as I'm concerned. And I vote for him based on that, not based on the fact that he drank champagne that some, shall we say, foreign dignitary gave him. Who cares? Machpatli. That's what I say. But of course, all the leftists here, we have no shortage of them. In this country, all the Smolanim, they don't view it that way. And I, by the way, say something similar about your president of the United States, since there are no English people here right now. They apparently went back to England. Anyway, so the president of the United States, you can call him whatever you like. People think he's an absolute lunatic. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm not joking. I say two or three things that are fairly obvious. Even though this Korean debacle up and down, et cetera, now he's about to meet him again. And the golden question is, who's going to pay for the hotel room? That's what I understood. $6,000 a night, something along those lines. The U.S. will pick up the tab, apparently. Oh, you're picking it up? Okay, great. You're sure nothing. Anyway, so who will pick up the tab for this hotel room? That seems to be the... But the fact that he moved the embassy to Yerushalayim HaKodesh, to me, is mind-boggling. And to me, for that reason, he was elected president of the United States. I hope you don't mind my saying so. That's my personal opinion. And if he's able to effect the peace between the little rocket man from North Korea and South Korea, that itself will be, according to my humble opinion, the greatest nes nigla that could be accomplished. So, in everything else, he may be off his rocker. Okay, so as ma, what's the problem? Okay, I'm not discussing that. Derech Agav, 1 second. I only said that Derech Agav. So the word, that's the language. By the way, I assume you noticed. I can't imagine you didn't notice. There's something striking in this parasha. There are many striking things. The end of Shlach is the parasha of Tzitzis. Guess what word appears in the parasha of Tzitzis?
Matur.
How does it go? Excellent. Or as you would say, lo taturu. Lo sasur achrei levachem achrei neichem. So let you held if you say lo taturu, not yet say. Okay, that's it. I hope that Baruch Hashem, here we have people who lay in sometimes Avrash Asradit. Avshom Zalman Reibach, thank God Baruch Hashem held you out, say. Anyway, could you explain to me what's the connection between that? So notice the end of the parasha, beginning of the parasha connected. By the way, it's not me. Rashi takes care of it. Look at Rashi says, lo sasur achrei levachem. Says Rashi there on the spot at the end of the parasha. And then Rashi says something incredibly striking. The heart and the eyes, what are they? Spies for the body. The eye sees. And often the eye sees that which it shouldn't see. And then the heart desires. And then what happens? It's all over. Wow, what a Rashi. Mind body. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. Just Derech Agav again. So I'm back to the verb latur. Wow. So that more or less word defines what the mission was and characterizes it. Take a look in Yeshua now. There's another verb that's used over there. What's the verb that's used in pasuk days? By Yomer, Lemelech Yericho Leimor, Hinyan Noshim Bohin Alayla, Mnei Yisrael, Lachpor Et Haaretz. Yesh Bo Kama Nashim She Dobre Yivrit, Ba Shiyuah Zeh. I just spoke something in Hebrew. I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to use that. It's not Swahili here. There are some people who speak Hebrew here. To my left here is my Rebbe, right in front. There are a few others here. Mazel lachpor et haaretz.
I don't know.
It's a modern expression.
Search for?
What does the word lachpor mean literally? Little translation? Chofer.
Digger.
Dig. Agamon Shabbos. Obviously, you know from there. The Gemara Blachin Zil Gufa. Machos Yavid Machachomim. Hachayfe Gumba Meitorech El Afra. Classic Blachin Zil Gufa, where a person digs a hole. Normally you dig a hole for what purpose to put in? Nimals, Machtin, Mitzinor, the Gemara says in Shabbos. But here, your interest is what? You need the offer, you need the dirt. That's called the Malacha Shein and Tvigal the Gufa. Correct? How do we pass king? Like the Abshimin, like the Chachamin, that you are potter. Because the Torah requires Malachat Machshavis and Hilchot Shabbos. It's not Malachat Machshavis. But Rabbi Yehuda says, Yechai, the Rambam has to pass king, like Abshim, Dom Shein, Miskabin, and like Rabbi Yehuda, Malachat Shein, Tvigal the Gufa, which is a Pele in and of itself. And at that, there's a longer Chaim Rizki, you probably learned that. I assume Rishonim and Achmenim have a field day with this nation. Okay, that's just Derech Agav. But I'm just pointing out to you, the word lachpor means to dig. Why is that term used over here? So the answer, of course, is there are two different objectives from Shlach and Tzevi Yoshua. Tzevi Yoshua, the objective is a military one. What is he trying to do, Yoshua? He wants to uncover the Achilles heel of, shall we say, those people living in Eretz Yisrael in order to strategically be able to conquer the land. Sorry?
Oh, Cherokees.
I am not familiar with that term. How would you know? I'm quite aware of your capabilities. Please tell me, how would you call them since you want to use the term? Let's say, for example, you know, I have a problem. I'm getting off the topic way off. When someone lives in a certain city, for example, the city of Baltimore. Baltimoreans? Yeah. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Baltimore.
That was what I was referring to. I wouldn't say that whole Chas v'Shalom, but anyway, so someone told me I can't say that word the way I said it because of what you just said.
What?
Okay, I won't say it, repeat it again. Or Baltimoreans. I'm not sure. So now you said, how do you put it?
Jerrycans,
okay. Like a jerry can. Anyway, Bikitzer, I want to let me finish my board. There's a fundamental distinction between the role of the Raglim in Shlach and the role of the Raglim, one second please, in Tzevi Yoshua, and is, I'm telling you, manifested in this, in the terminology that the Torah and the Tanakh uses to describe the nature of their mission. As I said, in Tzevi Yoshua, the mission is a military one. And you know what's amazing to me? When Netanyahu, I imagine all of you probably saw this, when he appeared and described what's going on in Iran in terms of the nuclear, shall we say, plans, and then of course he had literally all the minutiae in detail. By the way, the one who was involved with that was none other than the head of the Mossad, who was the first cousin of Mickey Marks outside of the Bracha, Hashem Kodomo. His yard site is on Friday, and I'm speaking at the Kevin Mitzvah Hashem, unfortunately for me. But anyway, so he was the Rosh Mossad. He apparently, you saw what he brought back, you saw what the President Trump also reported, the information that was revealed, mind-boggling, that they got in Tehran, in those nuclear facilities, and reported back exactly what the plans were, what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. Unbelievable, mind-boggling, despite all their lies and all their prevarications, et cetera, et cetera, to the contrary, the Iranians, who are known for their, shall we say, honesty and the like, but their skullduggery, that's correct. But anyway, the Meraglim of the Torah, the Ramban says, what were they designed to do? They wanted to paint the portrait of Eretz Yisrael, the beautiful picture of Eretz Yisrael, an idyllic picture of Eretz Yisrael. Hashem already testified to the Eretz Yisrael being wonderful, and the idea was to be Mesameach, the people who are going to inhabit Eretz Yisrael. And basically, the thrust of Moshe Rabbeinu was not to spy out the terrain, not to gain a military advantage, because then he would have sent professional Mossad people, career army scouts, as opposed to 12 princesses. It means he wanted them to be captivated, to be won over by the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, and to be excited about going to Eretz Yisrael. Kach katub b'Ramban. So writes Nachmanides. Right here in this Perash HaLotar. Okay, you hear what I'm saying? By way of introduction to the topic. So the Raglim of Moshe Rabbeinu, unfortunately, instead of coming back with a glowing report, they came back with a very frightening report, and they succeeded in forging an atmosphere of depression, and they basically incited the attack to say. Yes, what do you want to say?
No, I was going
to
say that.
You are just, like, you are simply, you must say what you have to say. Go ahead.
It seems like when Yoshua sent out the spies, they're looking for the weaknesses in the military and stuff, but when the Meraglim went, it seems like they were looking for only the strengths of the military.
That's for sure. But I wouldn't say so much, even though it does mention that's what we're talking about, Amadu and Rav. But I think the primary focus is really on Eretz Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal always compared this to the Gemara Kedushin and Memelech. The Gemara says, "Also love the Makadosh Yisrael Shachirena." You're not allowed to marry a woman until you see her. Why the Gemara says? Because you might Chas v'Shalom, let's say, if you see her under the chuppah the first time. Shemayir ba'dav ve'maguna v'teiskanu ba'atar amar v'hatar alkamocha. Maybe you might see something that's not so ay ay ay. and then you might not be very happy. So there are a few chassidim in the class, I know that. So I'll be glad to help you in the shotgun marriages that you're going to, shall we say, have. So you just call me at the right time, and we'll give you a choice. I'll give you a choice, though, okay? That I'll do. So I'll give you a choice for three. Is that sufficient? And you'll pick one of the three, and the chuppah we'll have right outside. Anyway, so I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes to make a decision. And so it says, Al-Shi-Yirena, you have to see her first. So the Rav Soloveitchik said, that's what Hashem wanted here. Since we are wedded to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem wanted the Meraglim to give back a stunning report about Eretz Yisrael, also the Kaddish Yisha Al-Shi-Yirena, and then hopefully Chal Yisrael will be, shall we say, taken by Eretz Yisrael, and thereby, as a result of that, I want to go. Yeah.
Are there any philosophical implications for why Hashem gave the Meraglim and Moshe? And gave Moshe the Rishus to send the Meraglim, because in last week's Parsha, of course, there was a lot of Baranios, basically. There was the Mitonim, there was the Asaf Suf people, the Erev Rav, the whole Asar, all that stuff. Do you think Hashem was waiting to punish them? Like, because Hashem knew, like, theoretically, like, Hashem knew that it would, it's going to be a bad thing.
If anything, I would say, as a response to what you're saying, maybe that's the reason why that Rashi actually quotes in the beginning of the Parsha, the Rashi says, what's the connection between the Parsha and Miriam, and there are many other subjects. That's right. But beyond that, again, beyond that, Rashi says on the second Rashi, Shlachlechol the Daizlo, because in fact, as we know, Klavisil and Dvorim, the Torah says, Batikul and Elakuchem, they all came to Moshe Rabbeinu. Where the Torah reports the Meraglim and Dvar, Mishnah Torah. So the Eretz reported there that Moshe there consulted Hashem, and in fact, what did Hashem say, or what did Moshe Rabbeinu say? Hashem promised us and told us that it's Eretz Tova Rechava, Chemda Tova Rechava. But the fact of the matter is that, shall we say, the way Rashi learns that Hashem gave them a Makom Litos, meaning someone who wants to err, wants to be led astray, can easily be led astray. But I would venture to say, based on what you said, that maybe Adrava, because of the nature of the complaints, of the complaints that were large in Baaloska, so therefore perhaps Hashem told Moshe, okay, now let's go ahead and do it in a way that perhaps hopefully will, Eretz Yisrael will be in there, will be we looked upon favorably, will give them the chance to send Meraglim, they'll be able to hopefully report back. I mean, well, maybe it's a response a bit to what you mentioned. That's very possible. I like that. I think you're correct. I do want to mention one other thing. One second. You don't mind. There's another verb that I want to just point out to you. I'm very sensitive to the text. I've always been my entire life. My father Shalom taught me that. But there's something else here also that you should be, which is very noteworthy. I think that the Torah itself almost telegraphs, shall we say, this upward buoyancy or trajectory, and then somehow we go all the way down. Notice that, I'm going to read up something, if you don't mind. Okay? Initially, Pasuk, let's say, Yud Zayin. You have Yud Zayin first? Moshe Rabbeinu sends them and tells them, Alu Zeh Banegev. What does it mean, Alu?
Go up.
Va'ali Seh Mesahar. Go up. I continue. The Torah, again, just a few psukim later, Pasuk Chavalev, Vayalu. What did they do?
They went up.
Next, Pasuk Chavez, Vayalu Banegev. The Torah, if you look, the language, of course, is the language of Aliyah, which, of course, is the language of going up, a positive kind of language. And not only that, a bit later, when the Kaleb responds, what does he say in Pasuk Lami? He tells him, Olo Nale, Yarashu Asaf Yahu Nuchala. But, of course, they say, Lo nucha lalos. No, it's not possible. Basically, and we'll see in a moment, there's now a change in the tone, because initially the Meraglim are trying to convey the spirit of Aliyah. Aliyah means going up, ascending, a positive kind of expression. But now take a look a bit later, there seems to be quite a radical change. And look at the language, a sense of pessimism that clouds the atmosphere. Which verb now appears subsequently? Take a look after they're saying, Lashon Hara, Pasuk Lamed Beis. B'shom Ra'inu es. What do we see? Who are these Nephilim? Who are the Nephilim?
Giants.
Giants, correct, but the word Nephilim obviously has in it this element of Nephilah. And then further, I go further in Pasuk Gimel of Pesach, they begin to complain to Moshe and Aaron, and they said, why did you leave us? Why did you take us? We should have died in Eretz Mitzrayim or in the desert. We're going to fall by the sword. And then a bit later, Zohar tells us again, correct, that Moshe Rabbeinu, well, they saw the same Takanun, but in effect, and then they are told, Bamidbar Hazeh, Yiplu Figrechem, and in effect, you see the tone has changed from what to what? From Aliyah to the Filah. And that's the quintessence of the tragedy of the Meraglim, and it's in stark contrast to the shall we say, descending and conquest, which have found the Baragman of Sefer Yehoshua. I think, who mentioned me before? Did you mention me before? I forgot already who asked me. On the Pasuk here, this is the Gemara in Saita, and Rashi quotes it also. Rashi says that the Meraglim said something very, very striking. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Perek Gimel. B'Shem Reino, they said there, we saw the giants, B'nei Anok, B'nei Anafilim, B'nei Ve'inenu Kachagovim. Translated, we were in our eyes as grasshoppers, and we were perceived by them as so too in a similar way. Ask the Gemara, how did they know how they were perceived by others? Right, Saita.
The answer
that's what Rashi calls the answer in the vineyard. But I believe there's a deeper psychological answer, which is probably the answer lies in the psyche of a human being. The chiddush of the Meraglim is the loss of their self-esteem. A person who loses self-esteem and is wallowing in that mindset will often subconsciously project and telegraph message, which is called body language, with his own physiognomy. I mean, somebody with a sharp antenna on the other side will right away read your body language. There's a pasuk in Mishlei. How do I know the pasuk in Mishlei? Tesis quotes it himself. No, I know it from Mishlei. I taught Mishlei. I hope you don't mind. I actually learned Tanakh because I was told that a Talmud Chacham has to know Tanakh, even though I'm not a Talmud Chacham. But it says Talmud Chacham has to know Kusha b'chadal svar. Rashi Kisisa, there's a Rashi in Brochus. Where the Gemara says, Minu b'nechem b'nayigoyon. So Rashi says, Al tagilim b'mikro, yosef midai. Don't learn too much mikra. Yosef midai. But mikra, you have to learn. Anyway, there's a pasuk in Mishlei. Kimayim aponim aponim, kedem shahadim la'adam. What does that mean? As a water reflects a face back to a face, so too one's heart is reflected back to him by another. You hear what I'm saying? So that's exactly what this pasuk. What kind of body language do we radiate? Not a very positive one. And they right away perceive this. And that's something which is a very important lesson. And let me just summarize this, what I wanted to say. Do you mind? Just 1 second, please. There's a Ran in the Drosh HaTaran, a very beautiful sefer. And this sefer, several years ago, when Rabbeinu Rabbeinu HaGaon Avraham Lichtenstein Zatzal, who was the Rosh Kollel here, so he said one year, a shiur in Drosh HaTaran. I attended most of the shiur, and there were others who did not attend, and even though the shiur was attended for them, but okay, then but anyway, at one point he asked me whether he should switch from Hebrew to English. So I don't know why he asked me. I said, why don't you ask the Rosh Kollel HaGaon Rabbi Miller Shlita? So he said, no, Rabbi Miller said to ask you. So he asked me, and so I didn't answer. Well, who am I to tell, give advice to the Gaon HaDor, Avraham Lichtenstein Zatzal? He was my Rebbe in 68, 69, 70, 71. Then he decided to make Aliyah and leave me. Anyway, so I decided to make Aliyah as well. I had no choice. Anyway, it'd be one of the thousand reasons. He's not here. Okay, he was not with his father. That guy. Anyway, the kids are, I'll mention his name. So Drosh HaTaran compares the Chet HaMeraglim to the Chet HaEgel. I have to speak about my Rebbe, that was part of my plan tonight. Chet HaMeraglim and Chet HaEgel. What's the difference between the Chet HaMeraglim and Chet HaEgel? Which one was given expiation? Chet HaEgel. Vayomer Hashem Salachti Dvarecha. What about the Meraglim? What happened to us? We were destined to wander in the desert now for how many years? 40 years in the desert. So obviously the Chet HaMeraglim somehow, which offhand, according to Rashi anyway, is far more heinous than the Chet HaEgel. Correct? Than the Chet HaMeraglim, sorry. The Chet HaMeraglim consists of what? Lashon Hara. Okay, it's not a good thing. I understand that. I'm not here to sanction Lashon Hara, Chas V'Shol. But according to Rashi, the Chet HaEgel involves Gil HaRayis, Shir Chizdam, and Abed Azara. Aren't those the three cardinal sins you have to give to your life for?
It's not sure the worst thing.
I'm asking you a question, and you just tell me the opposite of what I say. Why? Why is it worse? I'm not, again, poo-pooing the, shall we say, the normative of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is not a good thing, I'm asking. But is it as heinous as Gil HaRayis, who was done by Mizrach, which I have to give in my life?
Where was the Gil
HaRayis? You hear the kasha? Like I come on, I'm Amish, I'm Apostle, I'm Rashi. Take a look at Gisisa, but come on the tzatzik. It says Rashi on the spot. It's a medrash. Gil HaRayis was done by the tzatzik. Okay, I can't get it. But do you mind holding off?
About this question.
No, take it. 1 second. What's the answer? Okay.
I want to say that this is a bit of a hunch, but I want to say that
a hunch from a Talmud Chacham is not poshut. Go ahead. Yes.
That the Chet HaEgel, they were put in a position where they had very little free will. this, they had a lot more free will.
Wow. Why did they have no free will?
Because the Satan tricked them that Moshe was...
yeah, Midrashim, I can't deal with you. Okay, Midrashim, I can't argue.
Aaron put in the jewelry, it became an AO. It wasn't supposed to happen. It wasn't so question.
Okay, but I'm asking, I'm a simple fella, I don't know Midrashim, I just know Pshat. So I'm saying, I believe the answer is the following, I think it's found in the Ran. This answer, I believe, is in the Ran, between the lines, of course. You have to read between the lines of the Ran. There were two slogans, you know, every, shall we say...
The Ran where?
In Drash HaTaran. I can't tell you where, but it's in Drash HaTaran. I saw it many years ago. So the Ran is mechalik between the Cheder Egel and the Cheder Baragdim based on the language. Because every movement requires a slogan. What was the slogan of the Cheder Egel, if you remember? Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher He'elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. These are your gods, Israel, who took you out of Egypt. What's the key word over there? He'elucha. What does He'elucha mean?
Aliyah,
thank you. There's a direction to Eretz Israel. What's the slogan of the Meraglim? Pasuk Dalit. Per Gidal Pasuk Dalit. Nitna Rosh, Virashum Mitzrayim. They wanted to go backwards. The very antithesis. It's a regression. And as the mantra of the Meraglim of Sefer Yoshua is to lead us to Eretz Israel. But what is the mantra of the Meraglim? To go back to where? To Teaneck, to Chicago, to the five towns, to St. Louis. To Boca. Boca.
To Muncie.
Muncie. As I say in my benching, we'll name Muncie, okay? So Eretz Yisrael is not a facile acquisition, that's for sure. And our ability to integrate and nurture our love for it is a function of our attitude towards Eretz Yisrael. I saw the Goyen writes in his letter, the Vilna Goyen. I said the Goyen Stam, that's the Vilna Goyen. So the Vilna Goyen writes in the letter, he wrote a letter to his family. He never made it to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to make it to Eretz Yisrael. He writes a letter to his family that people travel for many years for monetary reasons, for businesses. They need their wives, they need their families, they wander to and fro. But I am traveling to Eretz Yisrael. And he describes Eretz Yisrael as Shukas to El Yoinim Va'atachtinim, the desire of all the above and all those below, that's Eretz Yisrael, and therefore it's Eretz Chendo Tov Urchava. Okay, and that's going to be my introduction to talking about my Rosh Hashiva. I learned a yeshiva called Itri. Yes?
Is there anyone to ask two questions on the Dvar Torah
part? Okay, never get to my Rosh Hashiva.
So,
okay.
Lashon Hara on Eretz Yisrael is an actual thing? I thought it's just about a person.
That's for sure that what she's speaking about. Eretz Yisrael is a personality. Eretz Yisrael is a human being. Eretz Yisrael has feelings. Eretz Yisrael, Enel Samel, Sobi Avera. One cannot speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, and also the Rav said in the Rosh Hashiva.
The only bit of Lashon Hara, if I ever spoke about Eretz Yisrael, is I would like to have here Gus's sour pickles. That's missing in Eretz Yisrael. It's about the only thing that's missing here that I can see. And the only thing the Chutzar has is Gus's sour pickles, nothing else.
What's the deal with sour pickles?
What's the deal?
What's the deal?
What's the deal?
What's the deal?
You've never tasted a sour pickle. I have Rachmanis on you.
She was making a pun.
I got it. I'm not completely obtuse.
So,
okay, can I only have 10 minutes. I have to get my Rashiva. Yes.
The Rosh Hashiva quoted in the Sefer Darash Josh Yosef in the name of the Rav. This part on last week's parsha that the Kibros HaTaiva was the one blockage to them entering Eretz Yisrael in comparison to all the other events that seemingly happened parsas Baloska that are towards. That's what the Rosh Hashiva quoted in the name of the Rav.
I think who spoke to me about it recently? Someone before. Thank you very much, Ashikach. The Rav actually in Baal Osvet Kedai is a very nice piece that Darash Darash Yosef. I saw it actually a number of times. I know the Rashi who wrote it. Anyway, so he connects all the different, shall we say, strands of the Pasha that seemingly are not connected. You're right. But basically what the Rav is saying over there is that there was clearly a ascendancy, a buoyancy going to Eretz Yisrael, and then it was nipped in the bud. And the same thing happened over here with the Rav. Similar kind of Yisrael. Okay, let me speak about Rosh Hashiva, Rav Mordechai Elefant, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. My Rosh Hashiva in Itri was probably one of the revolutionary figures. He built an American yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael in the late 60s. There were very few American yeshivas. I think I told you, when I came to Eretz Yisrael, there was only
The Mir?
The Mir Yeshiva, of course, was there. There were 300 people in the Mir Yeshiva. 300. No other zeros after that. How do I know? I used to hear Chaim Shul Levitz. I used to go to Nochem Shur, Yevamis. I hear Chaim Shul Levitz Shmuzin every week. There were 300 people in the Mir Yeshiva. Ken Yerbo, thousands.
8,000 or something?
I don't know the number, but Ken Yerbo. There was another yeshiva. I'm talking about the American yeshiva, sort of. There's a mirror, more of an Israeli kind of yeshiva, though it's essentially a lot of Americans there, obviously. KBY was a yeshiva that the yeshiva I used to go to here in Machabis. Chaim Yankov Goldberg, Zechitzad de Bracha, Talmud Chazanish, Biskov, and what have you. And then there was ITRI, which stands, by the way, ITRI stands for Israeli Torah Research Institute. That's the English, ITRI, although they used to call it ITRI because they say that's all they served, there was ITRIOT. We sent you a lot of carbohydrates. Anyway, so I often was in a yeshiva called BMT, which was right in this building, which is basically stands for best meal in town. So that's why I was here.
Basketball means Torah.
Basketball means, that's also true. But the meal was primarily best meal in town. I stay here from time to time because I had to get a square meal in the apartment. Anyway, that's all there were among the American yeshivas. This Ramonke Elephant was basically a builder beyond belief. Al Tikrit Bonayach El Bonayach. He was a world-class Talmid Chacham, and I'll get to that in a second. He was a raconteur. He was a businessman, Shein Kamoh. My brother actually was Zechariah ben Bracha, was his accountant for 2 days. I won't get into that right now. But anyway, he was an astounding person. And he went to Torah Vadas. Torah Vadas is a yeshiva in New York City. At that time, it was in Williamsburg, until he was about 13 years old. Then his parents sent him up to Eretz Yisrael. And then he went on to learn about Avraham Kotler in Lakewood. More or less, that's his background as far as the yeshiva background. There was a true story. His mother was diagnosed with cancer, and he was 19 years old. He came back to New York to be close with his mother, and then he learned the Beis HaTalmud, which I'm going to discuss in a moment. And his mother, who was obviously suffering terribly, it was her final illness, and there were 4 or 5 children who were not married, so he made sure that all of his siblings got married in a very short period of time, in order that his mother should be present at the chasana of her children, which is itself mind-boggling. And within a year and a half, all the siblings got married, and his mother was lucky to be present at all the weddings of the children. Now, he married a very famous person. I don't know if you read, there are several books I always recommend in English. One of them is called All for the Boss. I think maybe I mentioned Adam a few years ago. Anyone familiar with that book, All for the Boss? It's an astounding work, absolutely astounding. There are only a few works in English that I recommend. I really am not so familiar with some of the works in English, I'll be honest with you. All for the Boss I probably read at least 50 times. I'm not exaggerating. Another book that I read probably also as many times, 50 times, because I'm in love with that person, Avraham Levine, of Tzadik in that time. You familiar with that? You must read these books tonight. I'm sure Max will read them tonight. I'm sure something. Anyway, so he married a woman named Goldie Herman. Her father, Rav Nachum David Herman, was the Rav of Shul Williamsburg, and the son of the famous Yaakov Yossi Herman, and he's described in this memoir that his daughter wrote, All for the Boss. Unbelievable. You read it, Eitan?
Yeah.
Weren't you absolutely astounded by this guy? He was not exactly, he was just out of the box from beginning to end. You have to read that. I'm quite serious. It really could not really read. Okay, anyway, for a while, after he got married, and he was learning at Beis HaTalmud. I just want to tell you what exactly happened in the yeshiva called Beis HaTalmud in Brooklyn. Not such a large yeshiva, but the yeshiva that had in it there, in his time, the only Israel who were learning there. And I'll give you some of the names. Maybe you heard of them. Anyone in Rabbi Reichman Shear undoubtedly heard of some of these people. Rabbi Leib Malin. Anyone heard that name? Chidush Rabbi Leib on Shas. He was a giant beyond giant. There was Rabbi Chaim Visika, another giant. Rabbi Shmuel Charkava, another giant. He actually learned Mechabusa with him. He was also a Shatchim. And this Rabbi Leib Malin recognized the greatness of potential greatness of this young Talmud, Mordechai Elephant. Matter of fact, later on, years later, when he was living there in Tzitzel, he loved Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Elephant. That's why I'm connecting the two parts of the Shir. He was in love with Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, he had a connection to many different people, to the chief rabbinate, and sometimes once people complained about him that, you know, they're not happy with the Rabbanut, with the Rabbanut HaRashid over here, the chief rabbinate, so they asked Abdei Malin, what's going on with this guy? He's no longer in the Torah world, so he says. He said the following. Elephant, that's what he said, only knows 2 things. He knows Torah and how to raise money for Torah. That's all he knows. If he's involved with the chief rabbinate, it's for 1 reason, in order to raise money for Torah. That's where he operated, and the truth of the matter is that he was an astounding fundraiser. He probably raised, I'm not exaggerating, millions and millions of dollars. I'm not joking. Not only for the mostos that he founded and led, which one of them was Itri. I don't know if you ever saw the Itri campus, Beit Tzfacha. Never traveled there? In my days, it was a gorgeous campus, gorgeous. I mean, he built an entire campus. And it was taken, he got it from Moshe Dayan after the war. He was able, how did he know Moshe Dayan? He knew Moshe Dayan. Every week in the yeshiva, the Sar HaOtzar of the state of Israel used to come to the yeshiva to visit him. Pinchas Sapir. It was unbelievable what was going on over there. And the fact of the matter is that he was, shall we say, involved with many, many people. And Ad Kedei Kach, he was actually very friendly with some of the presidents in the United States, specifically Hubert Humphrey, who was a famous senator. You ever heard of him? Probably not. No one here reads anything, so they never know that. You know, there's a state called... What? There are senators in the United States. You know that?
Yeah. What's a senator?
Oh, he's from Minnesota.
He was from Minnesota, that's correct. He was very pro-Israel. Very, very pro-Israel. He was very friendly with him. He was also friendly with Golda Meir, who was the prime minister in my days, in the days of Israel, etc., way back then. Anyway, I'm only saying all this because, as I said, in the aftermath of the Six-Day War, when we got back to Jerusalem from Jordan, so he received possession of the, it was actually a Jordanian hospital, the Arab neighborhood of Beit Tzfacha, and that's where he built Israel. He told me that he captured it from the Jordanians. That's what he used to say. I'm an elephant. But it was a sprawling, beautiful campus. And I just want to tell you exactly, the gashmias of the yeshiva was not bad relative to, shall we say, what existed then. And he had in that yeshiva the biggest Talmidei Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. I'll just tell you some of the people. I don't know if you heard of them. Maybe one or two you did hear. The people who taught there were. The Rosh HaKol was Rav Shmuel Auerbach, who's become famous for other reasons. The son of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he was Rosh HaKol. And you had there, even someone who's still there, Rav Fisher. I don't know if you know that name. The Mashkiach was Rabbi El Shvatz, who's written about 400 Svarim. He used to take us all over to Israel. He was a Skad Mashkiach. The real Mashkiach was Rabbi Yaman HaTzadik. The Chazanish called him HaTzadik, Rabbi Yaman Zilba. And there were many other Gdoli Olam, Rabbi Chaim Ram, Rabbi Michal Zilba, who's famous as the Daf Yomi man over here. There were Gdoli Olam. Each one was a bigger Gdol than the other. I'm not joking. I was looking to see Gdoli Israel. Rabbi Elvin used to say shir, he said a shir kholi once a week, and the shir kholi was like a real ma'amad. It was like, what a charismatic kind of event. Every ram was sitting in the Mizrach Vat, all the ram, it was like 20 of them. They came from Chadera, because he also had an auxiliary branch in Chadera, and in Shalayim, and he would say shir, everything, he would ask 1,000 kashes, and everything he would answer, tzvei dinim. He was a real briska. They would, these ramin, wow. They would just sit there. They would pepper him with questions and destroy the shir along the way. It was something just to behold. These guys do kalat haru kula, every one of them, each one of them individually. And this is what I witnessed, this is what I saw for a period of a year and a half of my life that had a massive, massive influence on me. There was a Talmud Chacham named Rabbi Yossel Tzemer, Tzadik D'Bracha, he said the shmuzin in the yeshiva. How do you say sichot? He said Sichot in Yeshiva. He was a Kalina Chassid. We used to actually go to his house every Shabbos in the afternoon. We used to walk to Yerushalayim. Walking from Itri, he was in Talpiot to Yerushalayim. How long did that take you? Probably 15 minutes, most likely. It takes a bit more than that, more like 55, 60 minutes. We would go to Yerushalayim to eat Shal Shudas by one ram, and then go to our vessel Sainberg, and we would dance with him, actually. He used to dance on Matzoy Shabbos, Mount Malka. It was all, I actually know how to dance from those days. But anyway, he's a Chassidisha. And it was incredibly exciting, and really, it was unbelievable. The whole yeshiva was so outstanding. There was also one of the younger Rashi yeshiva there was Ratzi Koshelevsky. Everyone heard of the yeshiva? Rabbi Koshelevsky. Well, Goyin Adir, the Goyin Adir, who were in Yitzhak, and I was lucky to see this Goyin, and had a massive influence on my life. Unbelievable hashpani in terms of learning, in terms of the davening of the yeshiva, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur was so powerful, it went right through my bones. 500 guys davening, 500 guys in the yeshiva. 250 Americans, 250 Israelis. Stunning. The davening was so powerful, I absolutely was literally al kafi nishar. I was in a different place. I knew this was a Mordechai Elkin who happened to love Eretz Yisrael. And really, it's amazing that Baruch Hashem, as I said, he was really a pioneer in building American yeshivas. And he knew, actually, there were many, many politicians he came into contact with. You probably don't know that. I mentioned one before, Hubert Humphrey, Gerald Ford, President of the United States, Richard Nixon, he knew. He was involved with Israeli politicians, Ben Gurion, Yitzhak Rabin, Ezra Weizmann. He met the popes. I mean, it was unbelievable what was going on in that yeshiva. It was all amazing that such a Rosh Hashiva would have such a contact with so many people, and really it was just an amazing, 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 outstanding, unbelievable, shall we say, experience that I had. It changed my entire life. And I would tend to hope and tend to pray and think that the Yeshiva Torah Shraga also Zoche to hopefully impact you in a very serious kind of way. The truth of the matter is I was very lucky. There was nothing to do with the yeshiva, zero to do in the yeshiva, nothing except for learning. There was no telephone in the yeshiva. There were no telephones. There was one bank in Yerushalayim. The bus came twice a day. I had nowhere to go except to learn. So I learned in the yeshiva in a year and a half four mesechtes. Probably more than I learned in my entire life in that yeshiva. And I owe Akar Satov to the yeshiva, tremendous Akar Satov. It also changed my life. I decided to move from the world of biology to the world of whatever you call this world.
Chinuch.
Chinuch. Klei Kodesh. And I have not regretted it one day since. So I hope, Mitz Hashem, hope and pray that this year was a very successful year for all of you. A year of tremendous aliyah. Aliyah in the sense of Eretz Yisrael, appreciating Eretz Yisrael. Aliyah in terms of your own personal spiritual growth. And Be'ez Hashem is Barach. Eretz Yisrael should be a springboard for all of you, both collectively, individually. Be'ez Hashem to continue to go higher and higher.